Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered. It's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Philly, you are so wonderful and interesting. You deserve a local news podcast all your own.
Check out the JohnCast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with somebody that you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One on One.
That whole weekend of the Women's Nationals, even now, it's like when we see the girls walk past the office or they come in for a chat, it's still, you're giving them a big hug, and you know, I'm calling them, "Hey, doing champions," you know, just because of, you know, they're all on cloud nine, so they should be, of what we've done in a decade, but it's such a short period of time to start a program to where we are now. Still talking about it is, you know, I get goosebumps and I want to go play squash now.
And our guest this week is John White. He is the men's and women's squash coach at Drexel University, and he is coming off just a phenomenal season for the squash program at Drexel. John, thanks so much for the time.
Yeah, thanks very much for having me.
So let's talk about this past season, and as we're talking, just recently wrapped up, the women get right on the brink of a national championship, a lot of success individually. What was this year like for the program, for you, for the kids?
Historical season, really. You know, the way that the first half of the season was panning out, it was, you know, we had our goals at the start of the season of where we thought the program could go. And, you know, we had some ups and downs with some of the matches during the season where we lost 4-5 or 3-6. And we knew what the talent we had on the team and what we could do. And it sort of all pieces came together at the, especially the Women's Nationals, which was 2 weeks ago, moving back a week, which was the men's championships. You know, had a few little hiccups, and there was a 4-5 loss against Princeton, which was a winnable match. But the guys came back, and you know, we finished seventh. We were seeded eighth for the tournament. Finishing seventh was good for the end of the season. And then moving on to Boston for the women's nationals, and you know, we knew what the women could do and what results they could get. And the weekend was 100 miles an hour, and the adrenaline and the just the experience as a coach watching, but the experience as a player is, you know, beating Princeton first day 5-4, and then, you know, backing it up against the number two seed Trinity the next day. And it couldn't come down, you know, more to the wire with, you know, it was four matches apiece. And then our number two, Alina Bushma, she went on for the final rubber. It was a full house at Harvard, and she went down 0-2 in the last match. So, you know, our corner a little bit quiet and this and that, but all the girls were still cheering. And then Alina pulled it out and won 3-2 to give Drexel a national championship berth the next day against Harvard. But as a coach, you know, standing around for 3 hours watching these young ladies compete and yelling and screaming and supporting each other. And just when they all ran on the court with Alina, you know, yelling and screaming and tears and hugs and everything else, it was it's something that I'll never forget. And it's, you know, as a coach, knowing the hard work they put on and off the court and how the season was going, to see them, you know, hug and cheer and sort of tears of joy, it was unbelievable.
What does that do to a program? I mean, I would imagine that kind of transforms the way people look at Drexel squash, probably transform the recruiting, transforms how you guys look at yourself. No?
Definitely transforms the program of, you know, we're not just an outsider. We're not just filling in the top eight. We're not just there to, you know, to try and get as high as we can. It's like we know what we can do. The other teams are talking. The amount of coaches that text and call me on the way home in the bus just to congratulate us and how awesome it was to see Drexel up there. It just shows that, you know, the program is, you know, we are a serious competitor for a national title. And we did it from the number six seed going into the tournament. And I think it's the lowest seed to ever reach the final. And it just shows, you know, the supporters and alumni that, you know, what the program is capable of doing. And also, you know, it shows all the recruits that we're looking at, domestic and international, that they're not just coming into a top eight program. They're coming into a team that is, you know, is capable of winning a national title, and has shown that. So, and the emails that we've been getting now from the recruits, and, you know, it's great. You know, it just shows that, you know, we are a program that is not far off a national title.
What is kind of your origin story with squash? When did you get introduced to the sport, and was it immediately that something that you knew you wanted to do for the rest of your life?
I got into it at the age of eight. My parents played it. My older brother, David, he also played it. And we got introduced. My parents played league back in Australia in Townsville. And then, you know, it wasn't a sport that I took up seriously straight away. We played, you know, we played soccer, cricket, and a little bit of rugby league here and there. And then probably about the age of 15, 16, really took it seriously. And the parents started taking us away to junior tournaments. And, you know, I started competing at the nationals, was runner up at the Australian juniors in under 19. Back in the 80s and 90s, we had it was the Australian Institute of Sport. It was governed by the sporting bodies where the elite athletes could go to a certain area and compete for their sport. So myself and my brother, we applied for that, and we were accepted into the, as it's called, the AIS, and we trained full time for squash. And, you know, the three coaches that were there was we had Heather Mackay, who was unbeaten for 16 years on the squash circuit. Jeff Hunt was heading it all; he was the best ever Australian player, and then also Kenny Hisko, who was also amateur world champion. So with those three coaches, and they, you know, they taught us, you know, what needed to be done as a on the professional circuit and what could be done. And that's, I was 19 when I went there. And then that was the sort of the kickstart of my career, where they helped us travel internationally to play all the tournaments. And then I was there for 4 years and then loved it. And then decided to move across to Europe in 97 and base myself in Europe to play all the European leagues and everything else and play the circuit and never look back. And so since the age of 19, I've been living and loving the game of squash.
What was it like to be 19, 20 and, you know, traveling the globe? Was it ever overwhelming, or did it just kind of seem natural? And this is what I want to do, and this is how you do it, and this is just part and parcel for the road I want to take.
The first couple of years was a little bit overwhelming, where I used to love traveling a lot. And then all of a sudden, you know, you are traveling the world, you go into all sorts of countries, but then it's like, you know, you're living out of hotel rooms and you're not too sure when the next tournament's going on. And it was just sort of the first couple of years were a blur, but very, very enjoyable of, you know, knowing what I wanted to do. And then sort of, you know, after a while, you sort of get used to knowing that it becomes a business. And then you got to, you know, you're knowing what tournaments you want to play, what tournaments are good for your rankings, the major tournaments you want to try and get into through qualifying. And then it just became more of a business of, okay, this is what I need to do for myself. You got to be selfish after a while. And, you know, every time you see friends, they're wanting to go out and party and all this and that and talk to her about it being a professional. But then there's times that you got to be selfish and look after yourself, because it's, you know, it's your bread and butter, you know, at the end of the day, and how you perform is how you get paid. So, you know, it became that way, but then I endured it so much, and, you know, it's something that, you know, I'm now playing doubles and playing, you know, as much as I can.
What is it that you love about the sport? If you had to kind of break it down to a one or two things that just absolutely drew you to the sport, keep you in the sport, keep you passionate about it, what is it about squash?
It's life lessons, really. Traveling at such a young age and knowing what I know now through colleges is just the different cultures you get to see, the different cultures you sort of live in for weeks at a time, and the passion you get for the sport and knowing that it's played worldwide. It's sort of, you know, it's life lessons. You learn different cultures, you learn exactly what they're going through, and it's sort of, it's more of an eye-opener of you know, how to live the life, really. It's like there's no one way you can have your own goals and your own beliefs of going through it. But I learned when I was traveling that, okay, I'm going to go to Egypt or Pakistan. There's different cultures, but I love their cultures, and I was able to fit in fine of, okay, yes, you know, there's, you know, you respect what their cultures are. You know, you go all over Europe, everything's different. You know, you come across to North America and play the North American circuit. It's all different. And I really, really enjoyed knowing different cultures, very open-minded about it. And it's sort of, I enjoyed the travel and meeting new people and knowing that I'm going to go across to these countries at certain times in my career. And I enjoyed going to those countries, which then, if you enjoy going and traveling, you competed better. You know, it wasn't going somewhere where you completely hated it. And, you know, I had some buddies who traveled, and they didn't like going to certain countries, and they couldn't perform properly. You know, but myself was, you know, I found it very easy, very open-minded about, okay, this is what you have to expect where you go into certain countries. And I think that's what's brought me to college life, and sort of realized that bringing different cultures into a team and who fits where, and, you know, it's a bit of a juggling act, but it's something that really drives me forward of promoting the sport college level and bringing the different cultures together to play on the same team.
How about the sport itself when you're playing? What's your favorite part of the sport in the moment?
Competing. Every rally is different. Every shot is different. It's like there's so many different angles. The quick movement, you know, slowing it down, slowing the ball down, the pace of the game, and pretty much, you know, not knowing what's happening when you walk on the squash court. You know, you've got to work it out. You do have a game plan, but you still have to work it out as the rallies and the game's progressing. You know, it's not just, okay, you know, this is what I'm going to be doing. If your opponent could start out playing, you've got to figure it out at the split second. You know, after every rally, you've only got, you know, 30, 40, 50 shots. You've got 5 seconds, maybe 5 to 10 seconds that the next rally starts. You don't have a lot of time to console yourself, and sort of, you may have hit a bad shot, or, you know, you could be outplayed, and there's so much mental side of it going through your mind that you've got to work it out very quickly.
All the traveling you did, all the places you went, is there a favorite? Is there one place that just stood out as just an amazing experience and a place that just always holds a special spot in your heart?
Yeah, there's a few, actually. There's, you know, my first experience of you know, traveling to Egypt and, well, Cairo was, you know, they put a four-wall glass court, kilometer and a half or a mile into the desert right beside the pyramids. So, you know, we're getting bussed out as players, and then all of a sudden, and it's not played during the day because of it's not in the sunlight. So, you know, we have to wait until, you know, 8 o'clock, 8:30 at night before you play. Some matches are going on at 1 o'clock in the morning. But where the squash court is, it's, you know, 3,500, 4,000 seats around it. But you look through the front wall, which is glass, they have the first pyramid lit up in yellow lights, and then the second pyramid is lit up in red lights. And Egypt, you know, over there, squash is one of their biggest sports, you know, besides soccer. So you go over there, you treat it like royalty. And just to see where they could place a squash court, you know, out in the desert beside the pyramids, that to myself is one of the most spectacular events to play, and just their love of the game. I enjoyed traveling to Egypt all the time and just seeing their culture. Hong Kong was another one. They put the glass court on Kowloon Island that overlooked Hong Kong City. And then you know, obviously some of the tournaments over in America where Grand Central Terminal, you know, the biggest train station there is, it's like they have a glass court in Vanderbilt Hall. It's like played on it many times, and you have, you know, thousands of people just walking past the sport you love, squash, and some, you know, haven't seen it, but you're playing squash in a train station. You lose, you pack your bag, get on a train and go home. Plain and simple, really. So, you know, those three really stand out, and, you know, they're the tournaments I love to see, and hopefully people can promote it going forward.
Time for a break on One-on-One. We will have more with Drexel men's and women's squash coach John White right after this.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered. It's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
You open the fridge. There's nothing there. So what's it going to be? Greasy pizza? Sad drive-through burgers? Dish by Blue Apron is for nights like that. These are the pre-made meals of your dreams. At least 20 grams of protein, no artificial flavors or colors, no chopping, no cleanup, no guilt. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
And we are back on One-on-One. Our guest this week is head men's and women's squash coach at Drexel University, John White.
You played at a high level. You're ranked number one in the world, multiple championships, stuff like that. How did you deal with the pressure? Did you feel a lot of pressure?
It was definitely a challenge for sure. It's you know, the years that I was playing, of, you know, even just trying to get in the top 100, then top 50, then, you know, you qualify for these major tournaments, the challenge and the pressure of you qualify and then all of a sudden you're playing against, you know, one of the top 16 players in the world first round. It's like you've just played two matches and now they're, you know, you're getting thrown in the deep end. But, you know, that pressure itself is, you know, I enjoyed the pressure. I enjoyed the challenge. And then you get to the top 10 and top four. And then when I became world number one, it's like, you know, to be introduced on court as a world number one, just the pressure of that statement there. And it's like, you know, you're chasing that number one spot. Then all of a sudden you get that number one spot and you have a big red target on your back that everyone wants to beat you. So, you know, that in itself, and, you know, trying to keep a hold of them in one spot. It's, you know, the pressure was, you know, obviously, yes, it's pressure. And then it's just a matter of how you deal with it. And I felt I did quite well with it. And just that competitive side of the game of squash, I loved all the time. You know, some of my players here, they come and challenge me. I'm like, okay, let me go and warm up now and let's go. I don't mind.
How much of a grind was being a professional squash player at that level physically?
Yeah, it's obviously, you know, it's definitely a grind where day in, day out, training for the major tournaments, knowing, you know, that you're going to be traveling for the next 4 weeks, but you've got three major tournaments, or you've got three tournaments that you have to play. And the grind itself is, you know, knowing when to look after your body, knowing, you know, when you need to have a rest, when you need to have a light session. And, you know, you bang your body up all the time. You've always got some sort of tweak here and there where, you know, some of the tournaments is, you know, you could play four or five matches and each match could go for an hour to an hour and a half. And there's back then there was not that many rest days. So you could be playing three matches in a row, have a rest day and play another match. So you're beating your body up. And it was really year 2000, I moved from Holland to go to England. And I got a fitness trainer as opposed to a squash trainer. That was pretty much the period there. And that went for 4 years, where we completely changed my training schedule, completely changed of, you know, doing two a day or even sometimes three a day that some of the professional athletes did, and to do it everything on the squash court. You know, I had a meeting with him. He had trained some squash players before and other athletes. I enjoyed what he did, and a lot of it was plyometric work, speed, a little bit of track work, but a lot of it was off court. So I enjoyed that time with it, and we got a partnership together, and I went to him 3-4 times a week, and everything was off court. There were some days where I would leave his sessions and I'd be driving home and my arms would be shaking, or I'd be like, you know, it physically was just, it was just demanding, but knowing that the work I'm putting in is going to help me through the tournaments. And then restarted my career again of knowing that I'm actually now looking after my body, but doing the work. And some of the guys that I would train with, they'd be like, you know, they'd be text me saying, why do we don't see the squash court? Are you still playing squash? And I'm like, well, yeah, I'll see you on Thursday for a hit. And they're like, well, what are you doing? I'm just like, I'm just doing my own practices. I'm doing my own training, and I know it works. And it worked. You know, it got me to the lot more semifinals and finals and championships and everything else that went with it. But I completely changed my mentality and the way that I trained, knowing that it was still going to be good for my squash, and the results spoke for themselves.
When you're playing at that high level and you're training that intensely and the stakes are so high, would you be able to play squash just for fun with a friend? Were you able to kind of turn off all the intensity? And not that you weren't intense, even if you're just playing kind of a match with a buddy, but were you able to just unwind playing squash, or did you need to unwind, get completely away from the sport and do something else?
No, there was, while we're on the circuit, there was never a fun game of squash, that's for sure. So it was literally having to move away. And I think one of the best things, I had a young family where I had four kids at a very young age, at the age of 25. So, you know, going home to a family, I was able to sort of get away from the actual game. And like when we used to play league event, and if, you know, some of the guys that I was training with, they said, let's just go down tomorrow and have a little bit of a hit. Let's just go and play a match. That match would almost turn into a serious, okay, I'm not going to lose. And it was like, you know, and it got a little bit of a push and shove and this and that. But that, you know, going down just to have a so-called practice hit was not a practice hit, which was, I guess, you know, good and bad, where you just want to try and enjoy the game. But there was, it was enjoyable of, okay, you know, sometimes we like halfway through the match, we're like, okay, we're playing to whoever loses, you have to wash each other's car, you know, or you're going to buy lunch, or he's $100, you know, we're playing for this now. Then something switched and it was no holds barred. So there was no real enjoyment of, okay, let's just go and have a social hit. You know, even now it's like you go down and have a social hit, and I play league at the PSRA here in Philadelphia, and, you know, there's, you know, I jump on court and it's like, you know, I try and have fun, and all of a sudden it's like, you know what, I'm not going to if this isn't fun, I'm going to make it into a serious match. So, you know, that side's always going to be there. You're never going to lose it. And I don't think I ever want to lose it, because it's sort of, it brings me back to the good old days and what the sport means to me.
We mentioned you got to be the number one player in the world. You talked about winning on different circuits, multiple Professional Squash Association titles. When you think to the entirety of your career as a pro, what are you most proud of? Like, if you had to start a conversation about your career as a professional squash player, what would be the first thing you think people should know?
The enjoyment that I got out of the game itself. You know, it taught me a lot about life. I got to see the whole world, got some great friends everywhere around the world. And just what it taught me through life and what I was able to do playing a sport that I loved, and now being able to give back to that sport. You know, when I knew that I wanted to be a pro squash player, it was like, okay, I'm doing it because it's, you know, it turned into a business, but it also turned into a passion. You know, and just being able to last, you know, 17 years on the circuit, where I had probably 10 or 12 other guys who come out of Australia who just, they didn't make it, they didn't enjoy it, and they just went back home. And I was able to sort of, you know, grind it out and enjoy what I was doing. You know, you get some long travels, you get some, you know, the amount of cancelled flights, the amount of delayed flights, the amount of time you spend in a hotel, people are saying, you know, that must have been a drain. But, you know, I look back on it, and I enjoyed every minute of it. You know, it taught me what I know now, and I still love the sport.
Everything I read about you as a competitor talked about one of the hardest shots, you know, shots that were clocked at like 170 miles an hour. Was that something that you actively pursued, to have a shot that fast, or was it just, it's just part of my game? It's a result of my training and a result of my physical skill, and I just happen to have a really hard shot.
Yeah, from a young age, I always was able to time the ball so well, where I was able to, you know, get a lot of power out of it. And then, you know, it became a part of my play, where I loved to play at a hard, fast pace. You know, that was pretty much, you know, what disturbed a lot of the players that I played against was the pace that I could hit the ball out with in different angles as well. And then everyone's going, well, let's try and, you know, clock the speed. And then it became fun to, you know, hit the ball up and then to try and give it a good old whack. But that's something that, you know, I did on the squash court naturally, where just the power and pace that I had was something that I had from a young age and didn't really have to work on it. You know, I had a buddy, well, I still have a buddy, Brett Martin. He was an Aussie guy that I looked up to on the circuit, and we used to play some games where we'd just try and hit the ball as hard as we can every single shot and see if we can see how hot and bouncy we can get the ball, just for something fun. But it you know, we did that every so often, but it teaches better timing. It teaches you what to do when it's a bouncy court. So it was enjoyable at the same time, but that was pretty much, you know, my game plan.
To that point, like in baseball, when guys can throw 100, 101 miles an hour, it's like everybody in the sport knows, you know, stuff like that. Is it something in squash that is kind of something that, oh, he can really hit the ball hard and fast and people know post 170 miles an hour? Is that part of kind of the fabric of the sport and the following of the sport?
Yeah, definitely. You get guys who are coming through that, you know, they'll just say, well, you know, I think he hits the ball harder than ever. You know, it's the pace that some of the young juniors are now bringing to the game, and the angles that some of the players are bringing to the game. You see that, and you get to know that. And you know, same as with college coaching, it's like, you know, I'll know who's coming through or who's going to Harvard or who's going to Yale and how that young kid plays. You know, some of them are very, very fit. So you got to teach your players and coach your players how to play against a really fit player. Then others are like, listen, this guy or this female, you know, they put pace in the ball. You know, the ball's going to come back to you a little bit faster. You got a little bit more time because it's going to bounce off the back wall a little bit more. You know, so don't panic. You know, it's you need to know that. And once some of the young kids come out and they have the pace, I actually enjoy going to watch them play just to see if they can hit the ball that hard.
You talked about all the wonderful places you played. I've talked to a lot of like basketball players that would travel the globe and play everywhere. And they'd be in some situations that were really good. And they'd be in some situations where they'd be like, you know what? I think the next flight I'm going to be going home. Were you ever in places where maybe you didn't have fear, but it was kind of a, you know, a sketchier country, or some, it was just an odd place to be and maybe wasn't the best of circumstances? Do you have any experiences at that end of the spectrum?
Yeah, there's been a couple. There's been a couple where one of my first trips to India, we played a tournament in Calcutta, and, you know, just taking a cab from the hotel to the squash court was pretty much like an eye-opener. Like, you're going through, you know, one of the worst, you know, cities in the world of overpopulation. You see families in the street, you see cows in the road, you're seeing how people actually live, and they're living on the street. It's like, you know what, and then you go to the country club, and the country club's got lovely green grass and it's lovely playing and that, but then it's like you see the way it is, and it's like we were also told that you couldn't walk certain areas around the hotel because it just wasn't safe enough for the Western world. So it's like, well, okay, yeah, I need to get the next flight out. You know, it's sometimes it's not that enjoyable to go and compete, but it's, you know, traveled many times back to India. But then I think that's another culture shock where it's okay, you know where you're going to, you know how people live. It's, you know, it's not a nice place to go and see. The other time where I tried to get the next flight out was I was actually flying in on 9/11 into New York, and my flight into New York got diverted. We were just an hour outside of New York when it all started happening, and we were diverted to Moncton, Nova Scotia. So that was another time I just wanted to get on a flight and go home. But, you know, it's you couldn't.
Time for another break on 101. We will have more with John White right after this. And we are back. Our guest this week on 101 is Drexel head men's and women's squash coach, John White.
When did coaching first appear on your radar? Was it something you always figured you would eventually pursue, or were your, you know, days as a high-level pro starting to wind down and you wanted to see what the next chapter would be? How did it figure into the equation?
Quite lucky, actually, where during my career, it's like we used to, all the exhibitions or league matches we would go to, they'd ask us to do junior clinics, or they'd ask us to go and hit with some of the members. And, you know, you go and do an exhibition match and you're sort of, you know, you're hitting with some of the top juniors and top seniors, and you're sort of coaching along the way of, you know, it's only for like an hour. And I really, really enjoy doing all the exhibitions around the world and knowing the exhibitions. You know, you've got an hour and a half for junior clinics and an hour and a half for seniors, and you go into the exhibition and you do a question and answer, and that sort of brought me into coaching. And one of my goals when I finished was, you know, I had a few buddies who were opening their own facility. They were going into private coaching, some were going into club coaching. And then I got a phone call. I was living in Philadelphia, or I still am living in Philadelphia, but then one of my buddies had a close friend who was an alumni of Franklin Marshall College, and he asked me if I ever thought about going to college squash. And I had no idea about college squash back then in 2008 season. And then he put me in contact with the president, who was at that time was President Fry. Had a phone conversation about, you know, I'd be interested in the position, and drove out to Franklin Marshall College, and, you know, he showed me around and went out for a few practices, and I thought, okay, yeah, let's go for it. And then that was, you know, jumping into college squash, you know, and then getting to know, you know, how college squash worked with, you know, obviously alumni relations and coaching a men's team, coaching a women's team, what goes into it, you know, recruiting, travel, business, fundraising, everything. And then it grew on me, and I think it's one of the best positions I could have gone into.
Was that overwhelming, all the things that go along with being a coach that are outside the purview of coaching the team? How tough was that?
It was tough. It was actually, I think, tougher than starting on the pro circuit of having to book your own flights and hotels and where you're traveling and what tournaments to play. It's like, I think one of the first interviews with, or the first meetings with the athletic department was, okay, you've got to do the schedule. Okay, you know, you've got to do some fundraising. Okay, you've got to book the hotel rooms. I'm just like, oh, okay. And it's not just one hotel room for me. It's like, you know, it's a whole team. And then the bus travel and what time do you leave? And, you know, what time are you getting to the facility? And it was overwhelming. And I sat down with the football coach when I first got there, and he said, okay, this is how we schedule it, you know. And then, you know, I started to talk to a few of my other buddies who were in college coaching and just learning the ropes straight away. But it was like, you know, I threw myself into the deep end trying to juggle everything, but it was something that sort of, you know, the pressure on that of, this is what you got to do. You know, coaching was the easy side of you know, that was 25% of it. The other 75% it was admin work, which is, you know, as the years progress, you sort of realize, okay, this is how you do the scheduling. This is, you know, this is the time to do it. This is recruiting. This is the emails. This is everything else. And it sort of, it flows, you know. But the first two seasons at Franklin Marshall College, it was a whirlwind, but it was fun.
What was the challenge of finding your pace with recruiting?
The recruiting was, you know, knowing the baseline GPA and the baseline SAT or the TOEFL score that we needed, but then also knowing of other schools as well, because when you start to compete with, you know, the top juniors of, you know, everyone's looking at the top juniors to strengthen your one and two of both men's and women's programs, but then also, you know, there's six or seven other schools looking for them, you know, and looking at them. And if, you know, if they've got very good, you know, if they come in with a, you know, a 3.6, 3.7 and a 1400 SAT, then it's like, well, okay, most likely they're going to go to an Ivy League, you know, and especially if they're, you know, a top five, top 10 internationally ranked junior, and also with a domestic kid. So that in itself of knowing and then going after a certain, you know, recruit, letting them know what is on offer for, when I first started at Franklin Marshall College and what is offered as a student athlete here at Drexel, knowing the level they're going to bring to the team, but also for me now, the biggest one is their background and their culture of bringing that culture into the team environment that we've already got. You know, looking back at the recruits, it's, you know, we try and have them on as an official visit, or we try and go and see them at the World Juniors, or, you know, just to see how they are on court, off court, mingling with other people, their attitudes on court and off court also. You know, that's a big key of the recruiting.
So I think you were 4 years at F&M, and then the Drexel opportunity came, and the Drexel opportunity was basically to start the varsity men's and women's programs. How did that door open, and why was it intriguing to you?
You know, 4 years at F&M, it was probably one of the hardest decisions to make, was to leave F&M. So I just got into knowing the real ins and outs of getting to know all the recruits, but it's not just the recruits, it's their families and everything else. And the alumni base came back, like the men's were down outside the top 20, and the alumni support that came back, they wanted the program to be in another top eight competitor. And in my last year, we got them into the top eight. And then through the grapevine, the Drexel opportunity came up. I was contacted. I got in contact with Eric Zilmer, the athletic director here, who was here at Drexel. And we got talking, and he said, you know, there's an opportunity that we're looking to start a varsity program. And it sort of, that dawned on me, whereas, you know, I've always wanted to start my own program from the beginning, as opposed to going into either a club scene and you're just another coach at a club, or you're moving into a program and it's, you know, it's been there for 50 years and it's like you're just trying to, you know, rebuild it again. But that was very intriguing to me of, okay, let's see what they've got on offer. So I came in and, you know, they didn't have courts. You know, they only had two courts up here. The six courts downstairs was the old North American courts that they were going to completely rebuild. Didn't have a budget, didn't have one player. You know, they had a lot of a big club scene, and I was like, oh, okay, you seriously are starting from the very beginning. I went home and had a discussion with back then my wife about leaving F&M. Talked to my parents back in Australia, and, you know, Dad said, listen, if this was your goal, it's sort of knocking on your door. It's like, you know, if it's something you think you can do and it's something you want to go ahead with, he says, it's an opportunity right here. So, and I made a big decision, and it was like, you know, it's very, very nervy to start with, and sort of, you know, having to go back to my old athletic director at F&M and say, this opportunity, once in a lifetime, it's something that I would like to do. And, you know, they said, we can't offer you anything else, can we? I'm like, doesn't matter. You know, you can offer me everything, but it's something that I want to do. And, you know, and the hardest part was having a conversation with the team members at F&M saying, you know, it's something I've always wanted to do. And, you know, I've made a decision to move across to Drexel and made the move and then started the program. And here we are now, 10 years later.
Like when you take over, like you said, no player, building courts. Like, so what was the first order of business to kind of put your flag in the ground and start the building process?
Hired an assistant, a good friend of mine, Sean Wilkinson. He came over and he was my assistant. And then letting the College Squash Association know that we are going to be a varsity status now. And then it was walking around where the recreational squash courts were, and anyone who could hit a good squash ball, we would walk down and we'd knock on the door and say, listen, you know, we are starting a program. Send an email to all the club players. We got their addresses, and we sent a group email out and through the athletic department that Drexel is starting a varsity program. Please contact Coach White, Coach Wilkinson, and the players started coming on, and we got a roster together, and then reached out to all the lower ranked teams and say, especially around the area, and could you fit us on the on your schedule? Away we went again, you know, just trying to get, you know, teams playing against us. You know, we did a lot of travel the first 2 years just to get other teams on the schedule, and then we didn't win a match. You know, we had some players on the team that had never played squash before for the first year. We had probably four or five that it was their first time playing, you know, and then we sat them down and they had to sign off on the NCAA paperwork, all the compliance and what is the expectations. And, you know, I remember it vividly of, you know, okay, you know, then we started the team and just started doing, we were on the court probably 4 to 5 hours a day, every day for the first season. Just sometimes it was just individual, just here's a squash racket, here's a ball, this is how you serve, this is what the lines are for, this is how you score, let's go. And then sort of, you know, traveling with them, you know, teaching them the very basics of, okay, you know, we're going away for the weekend. This is how we're going to do a team lineup. This is what we do. This is the court you're going to be playing on. You've got a referee afterwards, pretty much teaching everybody college squash all over again, which is something that, you know, starting a program had to do, and I enjoyed every single minute of it. Sure, there were some frustrating times and, you know, leaving a top eight team, you know, playing off in the top eight bracket, you know, for a national championship with F&M, to traveling away, begging people to play us for the first year. But it was every second was enjoyable.
Yeah, to that point, there's got to be, like you said, there's sure there's frustration and stuff like that. But there's really nothing like building something like this. You can almost kind of throw the records aside. You get to institute the culture. You're instituting the direction. And, you know, I'm sure these kids are like sponges, you know, trying to take it all in. And there's probably nothing like that experience.
No, there's not. You know, it's you know, throwing everything away and you're just starting from scratch. And it's like, you know, just seeing both men's and women's teams sort of come together in the first couple of years of knowing, okay, and just teaching them, okay, this is the culture. You know, this is what we do in a practice. This is what you need to do in the strength room. These are your captains. Go and enjoy the sport. And then when we started to win in a few matches, it's just the enjoyment and the team camaraderie to see that at a very basic of being number 35 in the nation, you know, starting from the very beginning, to see the enjoyment that they get out of it, and then coming back for the next season, and then the email of recruits coming in of wanting to join Drexel, and everything that you put in from the very beginning. And each year was a new stepping stone for us. You know, each year is bringing in, you know, new recruits. Each year is seeing, you know, the seniors that only played for us for 1 year, but, you know, they helped build where we are now. You know, those players that, who knows, it could have been, you know, a complete shambles for the first 4 or 5 years of not even getting a full team together, you know, but it sort of started off and the wheels started turning very, very early. And just the culture of the squash scene came together very quickly. And it was, you know, as I said, each year is a new challenge. You know, and now, you know, each year is a new challenge. Next year is a new challenge, you know, to do one better and get the men's team up a few notches, you know. So, but, you know, knowing what we did at the very, very beginning to where we are now, and it's, you know, it's an unbelievable feeling, but it's, we start again March 28th for spring practice. It's a new season starting again.
To the point of, you know, where you started the program to sending out emails to kids playing club to having the women be a match away from a national championship in about a decade. Does it seem surreal to you or does it make sense?
A little bit of both. It's like that whole weekend of the women's nationals of...
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered. It's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
Why does every recipe I try need 18 ingredients, including a jar of something paste I'll never use again but will sit in my fridge for 9 months? I just want dinner in the oven, fast. That's why I love Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals. They send you fresh ingredients that are already chopped. All you do is put it all together and bake. That's it. No chopping, no weird leftovers, just delicious, easy-to-make meals. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
And we are back. Our guest this week on One-on-One is Drexel head men's and women's squash coach, John White. When did coaching first appear on your radar? Was it something you always figured you would eventually pursue, or were your, you know, days as a high-level pro starting to wind down and you wanted to see what the next chapter would be? How did it figure into the equation?
Quite lucky, actually, where during my career, it's like we used to, all the exhibitions or league matches we would go to, they'd ask us to do junior clinics or they'd ask us to go and hit with some of the members. And, you know, you go and do an exhibition match and you're sort of, you know, you're hitting with some of the top juniors and top seniors and you're sort of coaching along the way of, you know, it's only for like an hour. And I really, really enjoyed doing all the exhibitions around the world and knowing the exhibitions, you know, you've got an hour and a half for junior clinics and an hour and a half for seniors, and you go into the exhibition and you do a question and answer. And that sort of brought me into coaching. And one of my goals when I finished was, you know, I had a few buddies who were opening their own facility. They were going into private coaching. Some were going into club coaching. And then I got a phone call I was living in Philadelphia, or I still am living in Philadelphia, but then one of my buddies had a close friend who was an alumni of Franklin Marshall College, and he asked me if I ever thought about going to college squash, and I had no idea about college squash back then in 2008 season. And then he put me in contact with the president, who was at that time was President Fry. Had a phone conversation about, you know, I'd be interested in the position, and drove out to Franklin Marshall College, and, you know, he showed me around and went out for a few practices, and I thought, okay, yeah, let's go for it. And then that was, you know, jumping into college squash, you know, and then getting to know, you know, how college squash worked with, you know, obviously alumni relations and coaching a men's team, coaching a women's team, what goes into it, you know, recruiting, travel, business, fundraising, everything. And then it grew on me and grew on me, and I think it's one of the best positions I could have gone into.
Was that overwhelming, all the things that go along with being a coach that are outside the purview of coaching the team? How tough was that?
It was tough. It was actually, I think, tougher than starting on the pro circuit of having to book your own flights and hotels and where you're traveling and what tournaments to play. It's like, I think one of the first interviews with, or the first meetings with the athletic department was, okay, you've got to do the schedule. Okay, you know, you've got to do some fundraising. Okay, you've got to book the hotel rooms. I'm just like, oh, okay. And it's not just one hotel room for me. It's like, you know, it's a whole team. And then the bus travel, and what time do you leave? And, you know, what time are you getting to the facility? And it was overwhelming. And I sat down with the football coach when I first got there, and he said, okay, this is how we schedule it. You know, and then, you know, starting to talk to a few of my other buddies who were in college coaching and just learning the ropes straight away. But it was like, you know, I threw myself into the deep end trying to juggle everything. But it was something that sort of, you know, the pressure on that of this is what you got to do. You know, coaching was the easy side of, you know, that was 25% of it. The other 75% was admin work, which is, you know, as the years progress, you sort of realize, okay, this is how you do the scheduling. This is, you know, this is the time to do it. This is recruiting. This is the emails. This is everything else. And it flows, you know. But the first two seasons at Franklin Marshall College, it was a whirlwind, but it was fun.
What was the challenge of finding your pace with recruiting?
The recruiting was, you know, knowing the baseline GPA and the baseline SAT or the TOEFL score that we needed, but then also knowing of other schools as well. Because when you start to compete with, you know, the top juniors of, you know, everyone's looking at the top juniors to strengthen your one and two of both men's and women's programs. But then also, you know, there's six or seven other schools looking for them, you know, and looking at them. And if, you know, if they've got very good, you know, if they come in with a, you know, a 3.6, 3.7 and a 1400 SAT, then it's like, well, okay, most likely they're going to go to an Ivy League. You know, and especially if they're, you know, a top five, top 10 internationally ranked junior, and also with a domestic kid. So that in itself of knowing and then going after a certain, you know, recruit, letting them know what is on offer for when I first started Franklin Marshall College and what is offered as a student athlete here at Drexel, knowing the level they're going to bring to the team. But also for me now, the biggest one is their background and their culture of bringing that culture into the team environment that we've already got. You know, looking back at the recruits, it's, you know, we try and have them on as an official visit, or we try and go and see them at the World Juniors, or, you know, just to see how they are on court, off court, mingling with other people, their attitudes on court and off court also. You know, that's a big key of the recruiting.
So I think you were 4 years at F&M, and then the Drexel opportunity came, and the Drexel opportunity was basically to start the varsity men's and women's programs. How did that door open, and why was it intriguing to you?
You know, 4 years at F&M, it was probably one of the hardest decisions to make was to leave F&M. So I just got into knowing the real ins and outs of getting to know all the recruits, but it's not just the recruits, it's their families and everything else. And the alumni base came back like they were. The men's were down outside the top 20, and the alumni support that came back, they wanted the program to be in another top eight competitor. And in my last year, we got them into the top eight. And then through the grapevine, the Draxel opportunity came up. I was contacted. I got in contact with Eric Zilmer, the athletic director here, who was here at Drexel. And we got talking, and he said, you know, there's an opportunity that we're looking to start a varsity program. And it sort of that dawned on me, whereas, you know, I've always wanted to start my own program from the beginning, as opposed to going into either a club scene and you're just another coach at a club, or you're moving into a program and it's been there for 50 years and it's like you're just trying to, you know, rebuild it again. But that was very intriguing to me of, okay, let's see what they've got on offer. So I came in and, you know, they didn't have courts. You know, they only had two courts up here. The six courts downstairs was the old North American courts that they were going to completely rebuild. Didn't have a budget, didn't have one player. You know, they had a lot of a big club scene, and I was like, oh, okay, you seriously are starting from the very beginning. I went home and had a discussion with back then my wife about leaving F&M. Talked to my parents back in Australia, and you know, Dad said, listen, if this was your goal, it's sort of knocking on your door. It's like, you know, if it's something you think you can do and it's something you want to go ahead with, he says it's an opportunity right here. So. And I made a big decision, and it was like, you know, it's very, very nervy to start with, and sort of, you know, having to go back to my old athletic director at F&M and say, this opportunity, once in a lifetime, it's something that I would like to do. And, you know, they said, we can't offer you anything else, can we? I'm like, doesn't matter. You know, you can offer me everything, but it's something that I want to do. And, you know, and the hardest part was having a conversation with the team members at F&M saying, you know, it's something I've always wanted to do, and you know, I've made a decision to move across to Drexel and made the move, and then started the program. And here we are now, 10 years later.
Like when you take over, like you said, no player, building courts. Like, so, what was the first order of business to kind of put your flag in the ground and start the building process?
Hired an assistant, a good friend of mine, Sean Wilkinson. He came over and he was my assistant, and then. Letting the College Squash Association know that we are going to be a varsity status now. And then it was walking around where the recreational squash courts were, and anyone who could hit a good squash ball, we would walk down and we'd knock on the door and say, listen, you know, we are starting a program, send an email to all the club players. We got their addresses, and we sent a group email out and through the athletic department that Drexel is starting a varsity program. Please contact Coach White, Coach Wilkinson, and the players started coming on, and we got a roster together, and then reached out to all the lower ranked teams and say, especially around the area, and could you fit us on your schedule? Away we went again, you know, just trying to get, you know, teams playing against us. You know, we did a lot of travel the first 2 years just to get other teams on the schedule, and then we didn't win a match. You know, we had some players in the team that had never played squash before for the first year. We had probably four or five that it was their first time playing, you know, and then we sat them down and they had to sign off on the NCAA paperwork, all the compliance and what is the expectations. And, you know, I remember it vividly of, you know, okay, you know, then we started the team and just started doing, we were on the court probably 4 to 5 hours a day, every day for the first season, just, sometimes it was just individual, just here's a squash racket, here's a ball, this is how you serve, this is what the lines are for, this is how you score, let's go. And then sort of, you know, traveling with them, you know, teaching them the very basics of, okay, you know, we're going away for the weekend, this is how we're going to do a team lineup, this is what we do, this is the court you're going to be playing on, you've got a referee afterwards, pretty much teaching everybody college squash all over again, which is something that, you know, starting a program had to do, and I enjoyed every single minute of it. Sure, there were some frustrating times, and, you know, leaving a top eight team, you know, playing off the top eight bracket, you know, for a national championship with F&M, to traveling away, begging people to play us for the first year. But it was every second was enjoyable.
Yeah, to that point, there's got to be like you said, there's sure there's frustration and stuff like that, but there's really nothing like building something like this. You can almost kind of throw early on, throw the records aside. You're just, you get to institute the culture. You're instituting the direction. And, you know, I'm sure these kids are like sponges, you know, trying to take it all in. And they're really, there's probably nothing like that experience.
No, there's not. You know, it's, you know, throwing everything away and you're just starting from scratch. And it's like, you know, just seeing the both men's and women's teams sort of come together in the first couple of years of knowing, okay, and just teaching them, okay, this is the culture. You know, this is what we're doing at practice. This is what you need to do in the strength room. These are your captains. Go and enjoy the sport. And then when we started to win in a few matches, it's just the enjoyment and the team camaraderie to see that at a very basic of being number 35 in the nation, you know, starting from the very beginning, to see the enjoyment that they get out of it, and then coming back for the next season, and then the email of recruits coming in of wanting to join Drexel, and everything that you put in from the very beginning. And each year was a new stepping stone for us. You know, each year is bringing in, you know, new recruits. Each year is seeing, you know, the seniors that only played for us for 1 year, but, you know, they helped build where we are now. You know, those players that, who knows, it could have been, you know, a complete shambles for the first 4 or 5 years of not even getting a full team together, you know, but it sort of started off and the wheels started turning very, very early, and just the culture of the squash scene came together very quickly. And it was, you know, as I said, each year is a new challenge, you know, and now, you know, each year is a new challenge. Next year is a new challenge, you know, to do one better and get the men's team up a few notches, you know. So, but, you know, knowing what we did at the very, very beginning to where we are now, and it's, you know, it's an unbelievable feeling. But it's, we start again March 28th for spring practice. It's a new season starting again.
To the point of, you know, where you started the program, to sending out emails to kids playing club, to having the women be a match away from a national championship in about a decade. Does it seem surreal to you, or does it make sense?
A little bit of both. It's like that whole weekend of the women's nationals, of what I knew the team could do, the work they had done on and off court, and how they were just coming together to play for each other. You know, that in itself, like even on the bus ride home and the week afterwards leading up to the individuals, I was still like, what just happened? You know, that in itself, but knowing they could get the results if they put it all together, is, you know, for them to put it together in one weekend at the nationals and coming at the sixth and play for national title is definitely surreal. But it's like, you know, that's what we've been working for, and knowing what they can do. And even now, it's like when we see the girls walk past the office or they come in for a chat, it's still, you're giving them a big hug. And, you know, I'm calling them, "How you doing, champions?" You know, just because of, It's just, you know, they're all on cloud nine, so they should be, you know, so they should be of what we've done in a decade. But it's such a short period of time to start a program to where we are now. So it's, you know, it is that. It's you know, still talking about it is, you know, I get goosebumps and I want to go play squash now.
John White, this was so much fun. Thanks so much for the time.
That's awesome. Thank you very much for having me, mate.
And that will do it for this week's episode. Want to thank Drexel head men's and women's squash coach John White for being our guest this week. If you like this show, if you want to help us out, if you listen on Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating and a review. You can follow the show on Twitter at @OneOnOnePod. You can follow me on Twitter as well at @MattLeon1060. Thanks so much for listening, and be sure to join us again next week when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Crimes of is a weekly series that explores a new theme each season, starting with the true crimes that inspired Hollywood's most iconic horror villains.
Listen to and follow Crimes of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.